This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. He'd aged in the last 8 years, that was for sure. His face was weathered and gaunt, his hair grey and thin. He looked much older than his 52 years. A wreck of his former self was how one newspaper would put it. There was a beaten-down air about him, the look of a man who'd seen much and regretted more. There were people in North Shields who could still recognise him, and those people had gone straight to the police. The man had booked himself into the sailors' home as James Baker that week in September 1902, and when Sergeant Wish of the Durham Constabulary found him there, he too had recognised him immediately. Yet the man had insisted at first that he was indeed James Baker, a deckhand seeking work in the busy cargo trade up and down the east coast of England. The Belfast accent only added to Wish's certainty that he had the right man. It didn't take much persistence from the sergeant before James Baker admitted that he was not, in fact, James Baker after all. When you've been on the run for 8 years, moving from place to place, arriving everywhere as a blank canvas, and making up a new story for every new circumstance, telling the truth isn't quite as straightforward as it used to be. The sergeant even noted the relief on the man's face when finally he admitted that no, he wasn't James Baker. He was, as they both already knew, Captain Thomas Sinclair Leinster. It's fair to say that Leinster had handled things badly back in 1894. Charged at South Shields with setting fire to the SS Richmond, the steamship of which he was co-owner, in order to claim £6,500 insurance money, that's equivalent to more than £500,000 today, he'd asked two friends if they'd put up his £500 bail between them. He also asked one of them to lend him £50 to help track down the witness he assured them would confirm his alibi and prove his innocence. And that was the last anyone saw of Captain Leinster. Until, nearly a decade later, he turned up pretending to be someone else in the town he'd once made his home. Insurance fraud was not usually something that gripped the public imagination, but the specifics of the Richmond case, and the man at the centre of it, turned it into much more than your common or garden scam. Because Thomas Leinster might have been a master mariner, but he was anything but a master criminal. He planned to run the ship on cargo charters between the northeast of England and the coast of North Africa, turning Thomas Leinster & Co. into a big player in the shipping trade, and Thomas Leinster himself into the big-time Charlie he'd always dreamed of being. In January 1894, the Richmond set out from Tyne Dock with a cargo of coal destined for Algiers. From there it was on to Tripoli to pick up a cargo of esparto grass used for making cords and baskets and bring it back to the northeast. Nobody but Leinster knew that he was in big financial trouble. The next payment instalment on the Richmond of £1,000, about £80,000 today, was about to fall due, and, quite simply, he didn't have the cash. Just before the vessel sailed, Leinster shipped aboard 4 cases of paraffin, without paperwork, telling the mate it would be collected in Tripoli. He met the ship in Algiers and travelled on board to Libya to supervise the taking on of the cargo of esparto grass. Nobody came for the mysterious consignment of paraffin. When they called at Algiers again to take on more cargo, Leinster left the ship, telling the skipper and crew he would return overland, see them in London, and that they shouldn't worry about the paraffin. The Richmond arrived on the Thames on February the 26th to unload some of its cargo. Leinster came on board the following day, When the skipper told him that they'd run short of oil and had to use half the paraffin, Leinster grew suddenly anxious. Under no circumstances, he said, was any more of that oil to be used. He also informed the captain the ship would be joined by a paying passenger for the last leg of the journey. A deaf and dumb commercial traveller, he said, heading for Blythe. The passenger arrived the following day, carrying a note from Leinster instructing that he be given one of the aft cabins. The crew would note later that the passenger wore for the whole voyage a long coat with the collar turned up, a storm cap pulled low on his head and tied under the chin, and a strange beard that seemed to move about independently of the man's face. He also walked with a limp, aided by a walking stick, but in all other respects, the mate would say later, in height, in build, and in general appearance, he bore a strong resemblance to Captain Leinster. In the few interactions the crew had with the passenger, they noted that for a deaf man, he seemed to be hearing a lot of what they were saying. Also, said one, on two occasions he forgot his dumbness and did give vent to some words. During the final night of the voyage, the watchman reported seeing the man moving quietly and furtively about the vessel. At 5:15 in the morning, the steward took the usual cup of tea to the passenger's cabin, but found it locked, with no response from the man apparently inside. An hour later, with the Richmond steaming north between Flamborough Head and Whitby, it was discovered the grass in the hold was on fire. Not smouldering either, burning fiercely, and giving off a thick black smoke as if, the crew said later, it had been fed with something. The skipper remembered the paraffin oil stored in a locker dangerously close to the fire and ordered it to be removed, but the lock on the cabinet had been broken off, and the oil was gone. In addition, both the bunker hatch and the starboard door to the hold, which had been sealed shut at Tripoli, were now wide open, feeding the fire with oxygen. Despite their blazing cargo, the crew managed to bring the Richmond into the Tyne that afternoon and beached the vessel before disembarking the crew and the mysterious passenger, who seemed to have lost his walking stick, but was no longer limping anyway. That evening, one of the ship's engineers was going home on the ferry to North Shields, when who should he see in conversation with the ferryman but his boss, Captain Thomas Sinclair Leinster. He was not, as he usually was, dressed in a silk hat and an overcoat with a velvet collar. Instead, he was wearing exactly the same kind of long coat and storm cap as had been sported by the mysterious passenger the Richmond had brought from London. He was also absolutely filthy. If it wasn't for the fact the passenger had that strange beard that moved independently of his face, the engineer might have assumed they could be one and the same person. Word had spread through the town of the fire on board the Richmond. It wasn't surprising. A smoky haze had drifted across the town, and the smell of burning was unmistakable. The engineer heard the ferryman ask Leinster what he was going to do with the ship. "What ship?" he replied. "Why, the Richmond," said the ferryman. Leinster replied that he did not expect her in yet. The ferryman, slightly incredulously, told Leinster that not only had his vessel arrived, but it was on fire. Couldn't he smell the smoke that was slowly covering the town? He could certainly smell something, Leinster said, but he didn't think it was the Richmond. Although they were barely 5 minutes from where the ship lay burning, Thomas Leinster went home. He didn't visit the vessel until the following afternoon, by which time the fire had been brought under control. When he arrived on board, the skipper pointed out the open hatch and the door that had helped to accelerate the fire. "Oh, that's nothing," said Leinster. before looking quickly from side to side and adding, "But don't mention it to anyone." On the next tide, the stricken Richmond slid off the bank and sank to the bottom of the river. A month later, the vessel was raised. Immediately, a search turned up paraffin cans with their caps removed in the hold where the fire started, along with the charred handle of the walking stick carried by the passenger, who had, in the meantime, completely vanished. Loudly protesting his innocence and insisting he had never been so insulted, Leinster was charged at Durham and bailed by his two friends to appear at the next assizes. Having cashed that extra 50 quid to help him track down the witness who would apparently exonerate him, he vanished, leaving his friends out of pocket and abandoning his wife and their five young children. When Leinster failed to show up for his trial, the judge was handed a letter received that morning by one of the friends he'd stiffed for the bail money. "My dearest and best friend," it said, "I write this in deepest sorrow. As it is impossible for me to raise £100 for my defence, I am compelled, in deepest sorrow, to efface myself from the world. You may judge what this decision has cost me on your account, and on account of all my dear ones I leave behind in kind hands like yours. I can only leave them hoping all things will be well with them. As I write, my head swims and my brain feels afire. It is a torture too great to bear to face all the lies and the trumpery evidence they have brought against me. The blow came so terribly sudden that my brain has been quite paralysed by the shock ever since, and it is utterly impossible for me to attend the trial undefended. I therefore bid you goodbye, my dear friend. God bless you always, Leinster." No mention, in all that deepest sorrow, of the 500 smackers. There were reported sightings over the next few months. A Tyne shipmaster said he saw Leinster at a continental port. Someone else reported seeing him board a steamer for Bilbao on the very day he was due in court. The Police Gazette published repeated descriptions and photographs, but the Thomas Leinster trail went cold. Until that day, 8 years later, when he arrived back in North Shields. He never truly explained why he'd come back. At first he told Sergeant Huish that he'd come to turn himself in and face the music. He certainly didn't look as though he'd been having the time of his life in the intervening years, and he did mention that he'd spent 4 years on the Klondike, where some of the friends he'd made earned their fortunes. But he'd been unlucky. If it was family that had brought him back, he didn't go near them. Whatever his reasons, amid vehement protestations of innocence, Thomas Sinclair Leinster, arguably the world's worst insurance fraudster, finally appeared in court on November the 27th, 1902. He was found guilty and sentenced to 5 years in the notoriously harsh Parkhurst prison on the Isle of Wight. Within a year, he was dead from a paralytic stroke. It's easy to laugh at Thomas Leinster. Really easy. He was, after all, not the most cunning fraudster who ever tried to hoodwink an insurer. He was, not to put too fine a point on it, hilariously bad at it. He tried to cheat his insurers, he tried to ruin the livelihoods of his employees, let alone potentially put their lives in danger. When he vanished, he left his wife and children destitute, and he caused his friends, who had put up money out of trust and good faith, to be left massively out of pocket and betrayed. But part of me still feels a bit sorry for for Thomas Sinclair Leinster. His was a self-inflicted tragedy of almost Shakespearean proportions, and his end was desperately sad, no matter how much he might have deserved it. But ultimately, there's the limp that vanished, the ridiculous false whiskers, the selective deafness, and the selective dumbness. This was a man so inept, he couldn't even be quiet properly. So yeah, weighing everything up, taking everything into consideration, it was undeniably pretty funny. That was A Coastal Story. And I'm Charlie Connolly. Thanks to those of you who reacted so positively to the first story in this new series. Extra thanks to those who donated via ko-fi.com/coastalstories too. That's ko-fi.com/coastalstories. I do really appreciate it. Thanks, folks. Don't forget we're on Twitter now at @podcastcoastal. That's @podcastcoastal. And thanks to everyone who's followed so far. These waves you're listening to were recorded at Deal on the cloudy afternoon of May the 6th, 2021.